Good evening, everybody. We're back after a hiatus of almost 2 months. New Jersey Revolution Radio is back live streaming. This is Brian Powers. I am here at New Jersey Revolution Radio Studios North, and it's nice to be back. It's really exciting. I hope those of you that miss us are back, but I'm also hoping we got a lot of new people given what's going on in the world today. We can't imagine that people aren't taking notice of us for the first time, and we're happy to have all our newcomers. We have been out at protests. I personally have been out on a lot of protests over the last few weeks, as I know many of my comrades have. When we took our hiatus a couple months ago, you know, it was certainly a lot of expectations. I knew we were coming back. I didn't know how long exactly we would be gone, but I certainly didn't think we would be coming back in what is, in my opinion, one of the biggest civil uprisings. And I heard a lot of comparisons to the civil rights movement. I quite honestly think there's more activity than there was during the civil rights movement at a single time. And so, you know, my kind of perspective goes back to the train strikes of 1875. There were open battles and warfare, unlike what we're seeing now, which is most, you know, for the most part, peaceful protest. But the heat of the battles and the passion behind them has certainly made it a historical time. For those of you that are new to the program, New Jersey Revolution Radio has been around for about 2 years, and we have reported on anti-racist, anti-capitalist work. Our theme is art and activism, because we believe that art and activism can be combined to create solutions to big problems. And I personally, and I know all of us at New Jersey Revolution Radio, believed for a long time that we've had some big problems that have not been addressed by the establishment, that have not been addressed by our current politics, our current economic system. And there's a lot of issues that go into that. So on a weekly basis, we do try to get together, myself, my comrades from all over the state who spend time and energy out of pretty much the goodness of their hearts on causes they have great passion about. And we try to bring them here to you on New Jersey Revolution Radio Live. I want to welcome a new comrade to our staff, which I'm very excited to have. Leah, how are you? Hi, Leah.
Hi, I'm good. I'm excited to be here.
So let me introduce you really quickly. Because Leah's not new to New Jersey Revolution Radio. She's been writing. She was an intern at Wine, Women, and Revolution for the past. How long were you doing? It was just a semester.
Just a semester. So around 5 months now, I guess.
Yeah. So and Wine, Women, and Revolution, our sister program here at New Jersey Revolution Radio. My business partner and comrade, Heather Warburton, does a biweekly show where she interviews somebody in depth, a recent show, pretty controversial one, especially for those of us on the left, regarding nuclear energy and its use and its place in our clean energy future. Something I don't agree with, but we don't all agree here on the left. It's not a monolith. So, Leah, you made such a great impression working on that. And I said, you know, we're retooling the show. We certainly could use somebody with your skills. So I now have an assistant producer. I believe that's your title, right? Assistant producer. Do we add communications in there as well, too? Right?
We added marketing.
Marketing. That's right. Yeah. That's marketing, because she's helping us not only write for the show, but she's also helping us get the word out there. How you doing, Leah? Tell us about yourself. Good. Tell us what you're doing here.
So, as we said, I've been writing for NJRR for a while now, and since I graduated college with a degree in communications and cannabis studies, I've been promoted here at NJRR, so I'm very happy. I'm honored, and I'm proud to be working here with them, and I like to use my pen and my keyboard for good causes that I believe in. And the revolution's upon us, you know? We have to have solidarity.
That's true. She's a fantastic writer, and you're going to see the show get better and better every week as she runs. I mean, we've only worked together in a couple of meetings, but you've made a great impression on New Jersey Revolution Radio Live, just thank like you did with Wine, Women, and Revolution. So welcome aboard. Appreciate having you here. I don't see Kim on screen. Kim's supposed to be joining us in a minute, but we'll talk to you, Leah. I'll be demanding that you post links very shortly. All right. So
cool. Thanks.
So Kim Might is supposed to be on this live stream with us, but I don't see her. Her camera's off or whatever right now, but she's from the Green Party. Mm-hmm. We will pop Christian in that case, because he wasn't supposed to be here yet. We don't need a co-host. So what's up, brother?
How you doing, Brian? Doing okay.
So we wanted to start off, with some serious matters. I've been to the protests over the last few weeks. I've been to three.
I was in Red Bank yesterday with my wife.
Okay, yeah, I was in Asbury Park Where I streamed, and I streamed all these. So if you scroll back on New Jersey Revolution Radio on the Facebook or wherever, you can take a look and see our streams from Asbury Park, Clark, New Jersey, and Woodbridge. I attended all three of those. And there was a difference between all three of them. There was definitely a difference in the mood and the planning and how it went. And the difference to me was police presence. It was how the police treated the protesters and how, you know, and Asbury Park and Ocean County in general is just out of control. I don't know what the fuck is wrong with these people down there. But the police officers, basically, you know, if you look at the live stream, it came in out of nowhere, man. I mean, we were down there earlier. I'm streaming the protest. We've got Tom Violet, you know, is out there. Some great speeches. We did have a Black Lives Matter activist get a bullhorn over the Democratic Party speaker that was insisting that elections were the solution to all this. You know, so there was definitely some heat. But when I got down there, it was kind of after I was there a little late, and the police were taking pictures with people. People were holding signs with cops, and they were, you know, there wasn't heavy. There were a lot of cops. I say there were a lot more than necessary, if you say, but they weren't like penning them in, and it was just the body language was cool. So I left. I kind of honestly was like, okay, this is cool. And I saw some marching. I kind of was like, all right, the reporting was done, and there was still a lot of people there. I will say that, but it did feel somewhat friendly. And then as I'm leaving, I got back to my car. I had to charge my battery too. And so my battery's done. And as I'm leaving, I hear it's just blaring sirens from out of nowhere. Parades of cop cars coming in, flooding the place out of nowhere. It was an invasion. It was an invasion. It felt like I was in the middle of an invasion. Now, if you're sitting in the protest, you don't know any of this is going on. If you're sitting in the middle of the parking lot, in the middle of the street or whatever, holding a sign, chanting, whatever, you have no idea. No idea. That hundred, I don't know how many. Then I started asking the cops, what's going on? Who's in charge here? All right. And I was yelling at them and calling them pigs, but deservedly so, quite honestly. But yeah, I said, I'm curious as to what the fuck is going on. Who's in charge? The one cop tells me he's from Neptune, so he has no idea. Oh, good. So you just showed up with a gun and figured you'd shoot somebody if something happens. Good plan, cops. Good fucking plan. Never without fail, a white woman got in to defend the cops and insisted I was starting trouble with them.
Yeah, there's always one.
Now, there's always more than that, unfortunately. There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them.
A lot of people that will defend the police when the police are about to kill a whole lot of people.
Whoever was in front of my 38% street. 38% approval now. So that's that 38% that's just hanging on, right? It's that 38% of America that's never going to get it. That 38% of America that's tacky and ignorant. And we're stuck with them. You know, it's like a family. You know, you can't choose who's here. We're stuck with these people. We can't stick them on a rocket ship and send them to the moon. They're not going anywhere. They're not moving to another country. So we're stuck here with them. I mean, we have to educate them or shout them down or drag them kicking and screaming into civilization. You know, everything that they think they're doing is what we need to do to them.
It will work. And it worked to a degree. She backed me off. I kind of bounced off that line. I said, you know what? I yelled at these cops long enough. Let me see what's going on. And so I started walking essentially around the perimeter of the protest and looking at this police, which were penning them in. They were penning them in. I don't know what their intentions were or whatever. Some of them were getting riot gear on, putting on face shields. And at the end of the stream, if you watch, it's about a 15-minute stream. It's not a very long stream on there. It's called, what did I call it? Pigs, Finding the Pigs. Leah, there you go. Leah's first job is to find the stream and link it up there. Put it on the comments for everybody. The stream where I'm running around yelling at pigs and looking for the head pig. And honestly, at the end of it, I finally find this guy who finally takes accountability, at least walks up to me, starts talking to me. And when I ask him what he's doing, he's like, oh, the cops got guns. That's what cops do. I go, no, but you're penning people in and they don't know what's going on. I got kids. You got kids. There's innocent. I'm pleading with everybody because I figure if they don't know who's in charge, I'm going to be in charge and I'm going to yell at them and tell them not to do anything stupid.
Asbury always has families. It's always a community when they come out. I mean, people bring their dogs. Like Asbury's usually a pretty family-oriented rally when they have them. And Red Bank seemed the same way. Red Bank was pretty tame yesterday. It took me forever to get to the place, but it was like I said, it was tame. I was actually surprised by the number of white liberals that are coming out to support these rallies. I don't even call them liberals, just white people coming out. I think that that's a good thing. I tend to be a pessimist. And, you know, I tend to think Trump is going to win. So for me, I really don't have the best of faith in society. So to see that many people come out, to see white people coming out with signs, some of which really resonated with me, it made me feel good. It was a little bit uplifting. I felt good leaving that rally yesterday.
Yeah. Kim, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, your camera is off.
No, my camera's on. It says that you need to put me on stage.
Christian, is her camera on?
I don't see her, no. I see a black screen. I can hear her.
Yeah, oh, there we go. Yay. Finally.
I love you, Kim, so much. First show back, 2 months. Here's Kim Mike.
Yes.
Poof.
So.
All right, Kim. So, Kim, and now that you're here, my co-host tonight, my supposed co-host, although now just became a little bit of a thought. But please introduce yourself. I know those of us that have watched New Jersey Revolution Radio Greens that are watching the show right now, they know you.
My name is Kim Might. Lived down here in South Jersey and been part of the Green Party since ever 2016.
We are here in New Jersey. Sorry.
Yeah. So I've been part of the Green Party since 2016. When I gave hope over the Democratic Party, which I wasn't too thrilled about with, and, you know, anyway, as it was, but became a Green and loved the values. And, you know, hopefully we can, you know, grow the party or grow the left, which we really need to do. We really need to unite the left in one way or another, especially with everything that's been going on. Because we know the Democrats ain't going to save us.
Well, and you know, and that gets into a little bit of some of the protests. So I talked about Asbury and the police and you know, what you had right. And then you have my hometown of Clark, which was another another stream that, you know, was really honestly like an emotional day for me. I mean, I kind of felt like I had to go. I didn't know what was going to happen. It was very grassroots to begin with. A lot of great moments. I got a lot of great shots, and it was just it was kind of a weird personal journey for me that day. And I really think it's neat that I got to document it. There were also, you know, there were very tense moments though, and just, you know, the white privilege that goes on in these suburbs is really. I mean, those are the people electing Trump, right? I mean, those are the people that are causing this misery, and yet they live in these insulated communities, and for a community like Clark. To have to face facts about how they've treated black people that drive through their town is not going to happen with one protest. And they've come out repeatedly, and it's already starting to show that. I mean, the mayor of the Clark and Sal Bonacarso, the mayor of Clark, I don't know him personally, but they're not used to this. These small town mayors have been running their little racist island or whatever they got going on for you. Nobody knows that Clark's exists. Except for all the black people that have been discriminated against them. So for this to come on their heads, honestly, like they don't know what's going on. Like, oh my God, everybody knows thinks I'm a racist. I'm not a racist. I'm a good person. I got a paper out when I was you know, and this, the defensiveness, the white privilege is just really shining through. And there you have, in the middle of a Black Lives Matter rally, a guy announcing his candidacy for city council. I'm not even going to say his first name because what was even worse about his announcement during a white man announcing a city council run during a Black Lives Matter rally, what was even worse was the white people in Clark started chanting his name right afterwards. For the love of Christ, Clark, come on, man, you produced me. What the hell?
The first time I had ever heard of Clark, I was a student at Kane University. My best friend, Phil, got a job at one of the restaurants there. And he's like, I got a job at Clark. I'm like, what the heck is Clark? And he goes, Ku Klux Clark. I'm like, what? And then he proceeded to get pulled over like two or three times. And he's Portuguese. I was like, damn. I was like, Portuguese counts as black in Clark. I avoided it. I had a coworker that worked there. And I would drop her off occasionally. And then I would get in, drop her off, and then get out. And just head right top right back on the parkway. My buddy, he's like, don't linger in Clark. They're always looking for trouble. There's like gangs of like meatheads running around. I'm just like, all right, get in, get out, and don't look back.
You know, and the PR put, and this is the thing, like you see the police chief put out the stats. They don't have too many police brutality statistics from the use of force reports. Yeah, so you don't report it or whatever. I mean, listen, I grew up in that town. You ain't putting out enough PR to tell me that I ain't a racist ass town. And that goes for a lot of these towns. And I think, you know, when you think about the political dynamics, right? If you have a white town, designed by redlining back in the 50s and 60s, Levitt towns, that kind of stuff, right? If you have that kind of mentality, so you've already created a white island, so to speak, and then you have a political system where the cops get heavily involved. Police are now paid for by the town folk who vote for taxes. Are you going to pull over and harass your own townspeople? Or are you going to pull over and harass people from out of town, get their money, because they ain't voting for you, so they don't give a shit? And how do you identify now who's from out of town? In white town, Basically, anybody that's not white is now subject to a fine for driving through your town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's and this is and so some of this is like, you know, these leftover of redlining and the segregated nature of our state, which just isn't really addressed at all. It's so segregated. Kim, how about protests for you? I mean, have you seen what has struck you out there? You know,
the most one I would say with Franklinville in New Jersey. So I would consider for New Jersey a little bit more of a rural area, mostly a white area. They did have a Black Lives Matter protest out there. And I'm sure everybody's seen the pictures of two guys with the big Trump flag behind them. One was laying on the ground while the other one was mimicking what happened to Floyd with his knee to the other guy's neck.
Yeah.
And it's gross. It's terrible. You know, they were ousted. They both have been fired from their jobs and everything. But, you know, it's a sad thing that, you know, this is what has to happen for people like this to be brought up, you know, and you know what? Their lives will never be normal again. And you know what? They don't deserve to be normal. When you go show racial hate like that, you shouldn't be, you know, you shouldn't have a job. You know, your whole life's ruined. And you know, good for them. You know, it's disgusting to even think about, you know. What did they do in their life before this? You can't tell me, oh, they were never racist, you know,
yeah.
What kind of racism have they done before in the past life? And also, I would love to hear, I don't know what's going on in Franklinville, but like you were talking about with political officials, has the mayor made a statement against this?
I haven't seen it much other than the releases from FedEx that the guy that worked at FedEx was fired and the guy that worked at the prison. The guy that worked at prisons used to work at a youth facility.
Yeah. So what? How did he screw up those kids' lives?
Oh my God! Can you imagine?
Just imagine. But we did.
Oh Jesus!
But these are things that when it just happens in a town, I think the mayor needs to get out there and put a statement out. And these mayors are not doing it.
Well, they are, but they're clumsy as shit half the time.
It's hard for them to acknowledge what's going on in their own towns. A couple of years ago, when it really came out, like when the Me Too movement took off and it really came out and they were talking about sexual assaults on colleges. And I remember listening to one of the more prominent activists and she said, well, where are we going to go? We're going to go to all those schools that say that it's not happening, right? If your school says it's not happening, you're the first school we're going to come to because it happens at your school. Well, we can flip that. And instead of sexual assault, it's racist incidents involving authority figures. Every town where that says it doesn't happen, that's where you should go first to see where it's happening. They sweep it under the rug. Same thing happened in Ferguson a couple years ago in Missouri. They had the data. They just didn't do anything with it. So, you know, the question is, what do they know and what are they willing to do about it? And, you know, which community leaders or municipal leaders are going to be held accountable?
The demand is to abolish police. And that's not going to happen at a township level, especially in Clark or Asbury Park or any place where they worship the police. And another thing, you know, in both Clark and Woodbridge, and I want to get back to Franklin a little bit here. I don't know. Look, townspeople, mayors, city council, when you try to co-opt a movement, take the fucking blue stripe off the middle of the street before you run Black Lives Matter march. You know, how ignorant is that right there? That tells you it's just a bunch of morons that don't know what they're doing, trying to slap stuff together to look good. Franklin, but back to Franklin, I mean, you know, there was an article out there and I'm going to pull it up and maybe Aaliyah, actually, if you look at my personal Facebook wall, there's an article written by a former police officer about I Was Once a Bastard, I think is the title of it. Did anybody else see this article?
Somebody had posted that.
Yeah. It's I shared it from Heather's wall and there's honestly, like, I like to grab a little quote when I read these papers, articles and get, you know, to entice people to read when I post on my wall and stuff like that. And there's like probably a dozen to maybe 15 quotes out of this article that will just tear your heart out about the culture that goes into recruiting police. And you know, listen, I went in the military, man. You get brainwashed. It's what they do. It's not, you can't tell me that they don't brainwash police. It's what they do in any kind of military or paramilitary organization.
Any authoritarian organization.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these people are, and you look, so this guy in Franklin, who is no doubt responsible for death. I mean, you can't even imagine that he's got that kind of attitude towards black people. And he's in a youth prison and he isn't responsible in one way or another for human life being lost.
Yeah.
And that culture accepts that. That's the point of that article is, in a lot of ways, that that culture. And so when we talk about abolishing the police, my question, and I guess a lot of question to a lot of activists, is how do we get from where we are to actual police abolition, given, you know, you got towns like Clark just worship these people with blue lines and stuff.
You got to get on the city councils. You, I mean, at some point, you are going to have to vote, right?
That's not how they got the Minneapolis Police Department shut down.
Yeah, well, I mean, let me know when they have a rally that big in Clark. I mean, look, I think some municipalities are going to see changes, and that's a good change. Never comes across the board. It's very hard for that to happen. Mm-hmm. You look at the history of, you know, what's called selective incorporation. It's states. States taking the Bill of Rights. We have a Bill of Rights. We have a list of amendments, but we know that state governments fought the Bill of Rights for years. So we know societies don't modernize all at the same time. So even though a city like Camden might be doing well, relatively speaking, with defunded police, don't hold your breath for it to happen in a place like Clark or a place like Westfield or a place like Rumson. I would not trust that.
Mm-mm. Kim, where do we go? Kim, the Green Party. Like, honestly, we were talking a little bit about ballot access and the Green Party. I mean, if we're going to go a political route, if you're going to say, listen, we don't have the means to set every police station on fire in the United States. And I agree with that, at least at that consideration of resources.
Let's not set them all on fire. They can be converted into something else. We're just wasting resources at that point.
There's raw materials there.
I'm just saying
it's not. Listen, let's just not get it. But Kim, from now you are involved. I am involved. For full disclosure, I'm the national organizer for the Howie Hawkins campaign, Green Party candidate for president. He hasn't secured the nomination yet, but we're feeling confident. So probably Howie's going to be running for president. We know the kind of resources we get as third parties. We know what we're trying to do is rooted in police abolition and ecology and stuff. Kim, we need 36,000 signatures in the time of COVID to get on the ballot in Arizona.
Wow. That's crazy.
What's it like trying to push? Tell our audience, what's it been like trying to push forward?
It's very hard because you're trying to get electronic signatures. And it's hard because, you know, you can send things out to people, but it's not the same as going out there, you know, face to face to get people to sign. You're more likely to get more signatures that way. And unfortunately, this COVID is pushing third parties back. And we need a voice. We need to have something besides Democrats, Republicans. We can't be just a two-party system where we're voting for the lesser of two evils. And it's not just Greens, it's socialist parties. There's a lot of different leftist parties out there that need to have a voice.
Yeah.
And and I think these are the people that wind up pushing, you know, Democrats more to the left. I mean, we need somebody to go in there and have some kind of police reform. Nobody in Congress or in the Senate, I don't think, has ever put a bill out there. And we've been dealing this with what, since Obama? I mean, it's been going on for years, but I think the killing of unarmed black men has, you know, intensified during Obama. And still, nothing has changed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people talk about abolishing the police, but we need to go in these communities. Like someone said, I read an article that I posted on my Facebook page that it needs to be, how we go in these communities? We need jobs in these communities. You know, we need to be at education in these communities. You know, if you go in some areas like in Camden and Newark, you know, it's, you know, the kids go from, you know, it's what, from school to prison.
School to prison, you
know, pipeline. Exactly.
I see it. Even in suburban communities, I got cops walking around in flak jackets patrolling an elementary school.
Exactly. That's another thing. Why do
we feel safe?
Why do we need?
I don't know why. I don't feel safe with a dude walking around with a gun. I just don't. It just doesn't make me feel safer. Maybe I'm crazy. According to the world, I'm crazy. So.
No. I mean, really, no kid should go to school to see a police officer with, you know, with a gun. No.
Oh, I don't need it. I don't need it. But I look, we got it. You know, we're going to have a commercial break here now because we still have commercials every once in a while on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Although I will admit that I did not do a lot of rank sponsoring, wrangling, and things like that. So just so you know, at New Jersey Revolution Radio, when I play this music in the background, right, it means that Christian's going to smile, sip his coffee, and get ready to tell us what's going on around the world. But it also means I'm going to read sponsors and commercial stuff. So I got a sponsorship. You can go to www.njrevolutionradio.com and click on the Commieson link. You can buy a book called No More Measles, which I just had a copy of and I lost just before the show. Oh, there it is. See, I put my notebook on top of it. No More Measles. This book is written by Laurie Endicott Thomas. You can look her up, see her on our website. She's done at least 3 or 4 interviews with us. Combined with our man right here and conspiracy theory expert, Christian Perez and Laurie Endicott Thomas, we've been talking about vaccines. We've been talking about all kinds of lunatic conspiracy theories. We've been talking about all kinds of stuff going back a couple of years now. I want to thank Laurie. Check out this book. You can go to Commieson.com and buy it. I also want to recommend people look up the August Agency. Accounting for the Independents, the August Agency looks at our money here in New Jersey Revolution Radio. We don't have a lot of money. And what little money we have, we barely pay attention to because we're communists and we hate money. So we have the August Agency. Call them up. Take a look at them online. Google the August Agency. Call up Charlie. Let him know New Jersey Revolution Radio sent you. He'll do your accounting, whether you're an artist, whether you've got an activist group or a small business that you just don't feel like doing the books on. Charlie's your man, so hook it up with them. I want to thank Todd. Reform starts with a grassroots movement. I think that's what we're seeing today, kind of a grassroots movement, but I also think it's getting co-opted. I think it's important that we understand that we're not just involved here in New Jersey or in the United States in a fight against global neoliberalism. We really are involved in this global movement. Going back on New Jersey Revolution Radio archives, I found Christian actually found this great clip of himself. Now, I want to tell everybody that the date on this clip is January 26, 2019. I want you to think back then, this is way before any of the protests you see in the street. I want you to listen to just a little bit of how prophetic our man Christian Perez is. Let me just pop that up here. And let's take a listen to Christian Perez, our conspiracy theory expert on Conspiracy 101. If you take a look, www.njrevolutionradio.com, go to the little search bar, search Conspiracy Theory 101, cue it up to about 18 minutes and 36 seconds, and you're going to hear this genius predict the future.
Conspiracy theories are used by demagogues who often scapegoat powerless communities, right? That's the whole thing. We're going to go after people who don't have power. We're going to go after people who can't fight back. Right? A woman coming across the border with her child without any money and a formal education, she's not a threat to the status quo. She wants to feed her kid and put a roof over her head. She's not some militant from another country trying to impose Stalinism, right? But when these conspiracy theories center on Jewish people, people of color, LGBT people, immigrants, they worsen this environment of fear and they make racism worse. Anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, xenophobia, homophobia, and all these other forms of prejudice and bigotry and oppression, they all tend to flourish. And we can see what's happening now. Look at what happened in the immediate aftermath of Trump's election. Look at what's going to happen in Brazil. Look at what's already happening in Brazil. 6 months from now, let's ask ourselves about the Black population, the Indian population, the LGBT community in Brazil. Let's revisit what's going on in Brazil, right? We want to talk about actual threats to liberation and power. Let's look at that. We don't want to blame migrants coming from desperate situations.
So there you have it. Let's look at Brazil. 6 months from now, let's look at Brazil. That was a year and a half
ago. It was a year and a half ago, yeah. A
year and a half ago. So we kind of forgot.
smoke a lot of pot. I mean, it's not okay.
I do smoke a lot of weed and things go past you every once in a while. Year and a half later, let's start. What's going on, comrades?
So a year and a half later, a couple months ago, the Amazon was burning, and that the president Jair Bolsonaro of Brazil, he blamed that on Leonardo DiCaprio. I don't know if you remember that. That made the news a couple months ago. It wasn't the ranchers that he basically gave the green light to who were profiting off of the space being burned so that they could feed their cattle. It wasn't that. It was Leonardo DiCaprio. That's the reason the Amazon burned. I mean, to try and understand it, you're going to pull your hair out, but that's how conspiracy theories work. But a year and a half later,
it's just basic science. It really is very simple.
38,543 Brazilians are now dead of the coronavirus. Brazil has the third highest number of deaths globally and the second highest number of cases globally. The black population, I should have looked up the number. I want to say it's over 50%. We're looking at about 54% of the Brazilian population, the largest black population outside of Africa, a country with probably the third largest, or Brazil is probably the country, I think, with the fourth largest population of Africans in the world. There's only two or three countries on the planet with more black people than Brazil, and they're all in Africa. Brazil is, there are Africans that go to Brazil to learn African dances and rhythms and whatnot. So unfortunately, it is the poorest members of Brazilian society that are affected by COVID-19. Same thing here in the United States. It's the same story, running rampant in poorer communities, running rampant in communities of color. This whole time, President Jair Bolsonaro has referred to COVID-19 as a little flu. He's been downplaying it. He definitely went to the Trump school of presidential leadership. And recently, he started talking about defunding the World Health Organization also. He also, they tried the government.
That sounds familiar. That sounds familiar. I believe Donald Trump did the, you know, the two peas in a pod. Donald Trump was they're trying to defund it. Yeah.
This guy, he's
a great minds think alike.
It's the same thing. It's the same stuff. I mean, he's perfectly fine to let gay people get killed, black people, the native population. He had said some really racist and horrendous things about the native Brazilian population in the past. And these are the exact same communities getting ravaged by COVID-19. It's the same thing we see here in this country with the reopen protests and the institutional racism and police brutality. Everything that exists here in the United States is happening in Latin America. It's the same song and dance. Interestingly, I love cosmic justice. He kicked out a lot of Cuban doctors, which, by the way, Cuba has now been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize by a French organization because of their work in fighting COVID.
What is it with fascist countries refusing healthcare when they need it?
Well, the crazy thing is they kicked out like 5,000 to 10,000 doctors, calling them spies. And then a couple weeks later, they were begging for them to come back.
Crazy.
Because they realized that it was out of control.
Now, but he has had some resistance, from what I understand. The Ministry of Health. I mean, so for instance, he actually said, I'm not going to publish the numbers anymore. The numbers are bad. So I'm just not going to publish them.
He stopped publishing the numbers. And then today, the Supreme Court of Brazil basically said, no, you have to release those numbers. You can't hide it. So he was just going to sweep it under the rug. This is how institutional racism, this is how violence works. When you look at Ferguson, when you look at a place like Clark, they just take uncomfortable information and they sweep it under the rug because it doesn't fit their narrative, right? The narrative is that this virus is weak, that it's only going to affect lazy people, sick people, a small amount of people, and so on and so forth. Now they're looking at almost 40,000 dead. In the United States, we have over 100,000 people dead. This is anything but a game. This is anything but a joke. And this is anything but something. This is not something to be laughed at. And unfortunately, there's that 40%, 38% of this country that doesn't get it and doesn't seem to ever want to get it.
Yeah, that's terrible. So looking at South America, it's been, I mean, that's been a looming disaster. It's kind of been able to be predicted.
Oh,
in Europe, in Greece, in Italy, and on the other side of the Atlantic, do we have anything going on over there? How is COVID as far as, you know, the curve? Are they staying below it? Or are they spiking?
Well, I mean, each country's responding differently. I know Sweden decided not to shut down at all, and they're facing some serious consequences. Britain has, I believe, the second highest number of cases in the world after the United States. They are the, you know, they're the one of the world leaders in getting COVID-19. But what I'm more interested in is, A, you see a lot of the anti-imperialist protests, how Black Lives Matter has manifested differently in Europe as anti-colonial, anti-imperialist protests. On one hand, that's a good thing. In Eastern Europe, in a place like Russia, or in this instance, Hungary, you have a president that is using COVID-19 as a Trojan horse to clamp down on human rights. So immigrants, the LGBT community, political dissidents have all been targeted by the government in Hungary. The guy's name is Orban. He's the current president. So he's the president. His political party has 2/3 of the Senate, and they own, and he and his allies own 90% of all media in that country. Mm-hmm. That media also routinely calls for the arrest and attacks on journalists in that country. So in some parts of the world, the left is struggling and to fight the virus. In other parts, the right is just completely clamping down. Same thing in Bolivia, right? There were supposed to be elections in May. They got pushed back to November. Same nonsense. The government is, the president of Bolivia has passed laws basically saying that police can harm people with impunity. They're not going to face repercussions. There's not going to be any consequences. And people can face prison sentences of up to 10 years for like these really vague crimes that they can charge you with. So on one hand, we see the left or what passes for the left or socialistic, quote unquote, authoritarian governments like China, Cuba doing something to fight it. We see Western democracies slowing to respond, and we see right-wing governments absolutely failing to meet the challenge. 2020 is pulling everyone's mask off. I mean, whether it's the Democrats and their murder of the Me Too movement, whether it's the Democrats and their blind support for someone like Joe Biden, whether it's all the racists coming out of the woodwork, 2020 has revealed everyone for who they truly are.
That's a pretty heavy statement, man. Especially when we're seeing what we're seeing out there. A lot of similarities, and that's the thing. And I remember back to Ferguson, and even prior, going back to Occupy, and even Wisconsin, international ties with Palestinian solidarity.
Yeah.
The Egyptian revolutionary solidarity. Remember the journey of the Egyptian revolution? We were seeing signs wishing solidarity to Wisconsin workers. And
I saw on the news today, there was a Palestinian artist who painted a mural of George Floyd in the West Bank. I mean, the solidarity is there. The good people are out there. I'm a pessimist. I tend to get depressed a lot, and I tend to spread a lot of the bad news. But there are good people doing good work out there. There are people in places like Bolivia, in places like Brazil, in places like Hungary that are literally putting their lives on the line to do what's right. On top of the virus, they have to deal with the most repressive of governments. And, you know, sometimes it's okay to take a step back and just applaud some of these nameless heroes. It's a good thing. And we don't always want to get caught up on the negativity all the time.
No, I've been trying to stay positive. I'll be honest with you. That's been a personal struggle of mine. Like, you even, you know, looking at the live streams, I kind of start off with that. It kind of sucks almost every time.
But we need to be honest about what's going on.
Thank God for the activists that brought me up, though. The spirit of some of these protests, while it's being portrayed, and even we talk about all these negative, implications, and it's serious business. We're fighting death. We're fighting fascism.
Yeah.
But you can have some fun at them too. I think we got to remember that, we do some chanting and we walk around the parking lot, and it's inspiring to hear people with struggle speak out. So I guess those are hard things to focus on. But
what
it's
nice song dancing in the streets, right?
Right. Kim, have you had any fun at all out there with some of these protests? I mean, there has been some drumming and stuff. I heard some good stories.
I think one of my best stories was I didn't get to go to Philadelphia on the day I wanted to, but I like the idea that finally Frank Rizzo is nailed down.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Tell our audience, for those, we may have nationwide tonight. We really got some good viewers. I'm looking at the numbers.
So,
tell people who the bastard Frank Rizzo is and why he's not coming down.
Frank
is such a wonderful
Rizzo
thing.
Was during the 70s, 80s. He was commissioner of the police department in Philadelphia, and then he was also mayor of Philadelphia. A lot of people who I would say probably a little bit were racist and stuff like that liked Frank Rizzo because he was tough on crime, which literally meant that, he was not very supportive of, I'm sure he did a lot of brutality against people of color. But of course, back in those days, we didn't have the smartphone where we can all be videotaping. Yeah. He was known to raid gay bars. He also was known to, they wanted to build, a housing project in a white neighborhood, which he sort of didn't let go through. People been mad at the statue before. The protesters did try to get it down. A rope wasn't going to do it. I think they needed a good, probably a chainsaw to take it down or something, but they did paint it and they finally did remove it. So, hopefully it doesn't go back up. And I think we've been seeing, it's not with just Frank Rizzo, but there's a couple other statues that, have been starting to come down. I have some of, I will say family members or acquaintances who say, well, those statues shouldn't come down. That's part of history. And then I say to him, well, Hitler is part of history, but do we want to see his statue up?
Right.
I don't know about them, but I use books to teach history. staring at a statue is good, but there's only so much you can learn from just staring at a statue. You know, people crack me up. I mean, you tear down a statue of Hitler in Germany, that doesn't mean we're not going to learn about World War II anymore. It's just these people don't have an argument, so they need to say something. They feel compelled to say something. So it's always the same just hackneyed, cliched nonsense. Oh, history. We're not getting rid of history. We're making a new world. We're building something new. And that means sweeping away some of the old. I'm in favor of it. No statues for racists. No statues for imperialists.
My favorite is Columbus in the River. That's my favorite. You know, I listen, Rizzo is a bastard. It's good that he's dead. But Columbus in the River, the fact that a group of people got together, not only tore down a statue, but carried it to a river and threw it in there. That is exactly where that statue belongs.
One person was like, let him discover Atlantis now.
I hope that his butt is sticking slightly out of the river and that they pierce it with something for
him. Oh, my God.
I mean, really, that would be a more fit. That's the kind of tribute we should be paying to Christopher Columbus, in my opinion. That's more appropriate. It's still a tribute to history in my mind.
One of the statues that was torn down in Belgium was of King Leopold II. Now, he was a very... He had a lot of self-respect issues, and his cousins were like the Queen of England and the Kaiser of Germany, and Belgium never had an empire. So he was obsessed with it. And then he ended up forging an empire in Belgium where they ultimately killed 5 to 8 million people, or half of the Congolese population. That was one of the statues that went down. Anyone interested can pick up the book, King Leopold's Ghost. And there's also a really cool documentary available for free on YouTube, and it's called... have the name here. It's called Congo, White King, Red Rubber, Black Death. It's a documentary that came out about 15 years ago. Congo, White King, Red Rubber, Black Death. It's available for free on YouTube. So if anyone's interested, they could really find out like why there is this anger and resentment towards King Leopold.
If you look this guy, I mean, they've made a few news programs. I've seen some YouTube videos on this guy. I mean, what a disgusting, they used to cut off hands.
Yeah.
They would literally, like, you would have to go. There were people whose jobs was to go out and find hands because hands were being marketed and sold.
Yeah. I mean, if you were a parent and you didn't work, I mean, the Spanish Columbus did the exact same thing.
Yeah.
If you didn't produce enough, they would grab one of your children and then cut their hand off. And then make you wear it around your neck, or make the kid wear it around their neck.
Unbelievable.
Right? Like it's not 1492 Columbus sailed the ocean blue. That's great when you're six. When you're an adult, it's time to be serious about the real world and ask the tough questions. And you know, Columbus, it's like, how do you discover something? And there's already like multitudes of civilizations there, hundreds of thousands of people, and you discover it. It's you know, part of this narrative, part of this lie that we tell ourselves. And you could go out there and you'll find a million people who really will give you that oatmeal Columbus crap. These are the same people who still believe George Washington never told a lie. People really believe that stuff.
I remember third grade, the indoctrination that I went to. And does anybody remember being told that communists couldn't buy blue jeans?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, the ridiculous, like the propaganda and we don't realize how thick it is. We really don't. And why, you know, and as you grow up, you know, now you just start questioning everything. And now where does the truth therein lie? When we hear about the crimes committed by Stalin and the crimes committed by, you know, communist dictators. And I see people talking about the bloodbath that Vladimir Lenin caused. Yeah. Lenin got rid of a feudal lord family that was enslaving millions of people under a ridiculously bad agricultural system.
Lenin had to deal with every major world power invading his country immediately after the First World War.
Still,
right? We don't talk the Russian war here. Russia never forgot that. Russia never forgot that we invaded their country when they had a revolution. They don't teach that here, so Americans are oblivious to it. But whether it's the Philippines, whether it's whether it's Russia, there are histories that we don't teach here that other people are very much aware of, and they resent us for it. And Americans like just naively don't understand. And it's like, well, why do they hate us? Because you support bad policies, because you support bad politicians, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
None of this, I always say, none of this is hard. It's not hard. We make life hard. We make politics hard.
You think? I mean, they are complicated matters, but some of this stuff is easy. I mean, you know, like police killing black people is wrong, but we're having a hard time with that. And that's reflective of a society that's been indoctrinated since birth, since public education, through public education, through everything, all these systems. And that's why, yeah, I just don't know. When you say, you know, people got to get involved in, listen, here I am running, you know, a political campaign, you know, a presidential political campaign as part of my livelihood right now. But I don't, I even as part of that, I'm saying that elections are not the answer. It really, it seems to me that elections made by a country full of racist idiots is really no good. We're just turning, we've already got President Camacho. You know, we've already got idiocracy going on. We can't run an election. We can't run any functioning government at this point because we're just so far gone as a country. Yeah. Sometimes I worry, and I worry about how we kind of collect this up and get it going in the right direction. I don't know.
It takes, like, I always tell my students, I say voting is good, but voting is literally, like, other than nothing, voting is like the least you can do, because once a year you pull a lever, right? But joining political parties, getting on campaigns, canvassing, watching programs like New Jersey Revolution Radio, having study groups. I mean, there are a number of things you can do to get involved in a democracy. If you're voting, I think that that's a good thing, right? I teach political science. I think people should be voting. But you need to have a larger perspective of what's necessary to change society. Voting is good, but you need that grassroots support.
Exactly.
You need people on the bottom, because if it's a two-way street. You need leadership, and then you need the masses who are willing to meet that kind of leadership. The problem is we just don't have the leadership in this country. When Joe Biden's solution to Trump's violence is shoot protesters in the leg, it's like, you're not helping, guy. You're not.
That's your lesser of two evils right there, right?
Yeah, you're not helping, guy. Like,
that's our lesser of two evils. I mean, it is what it is. I really wish you could hang out more. We got it. We actually ran out of time. We did a whole show already. That's awesome. Isn't that amazing? Kim.
Yes.
Plug stuff. What, where can we find Kim? What's going on with the Green Party? What's up? How can we find Kim Might out there in the world over the next
week? Right now we're trying to really get, you know, Madeline Hoffman, who's running for Senate, on about trying to collect signatures. And also we're trying to get our signatures done for Hallie Hawkins. So that's our main focus right now, is to get those signatures and get them on the ballot, so people have option besides, you know, red or blue.
It's hard out there, and so the those of you that weren't listening earlier, you know, the getting signatures is not as easy as it used to be. You got to find stuff online. I think that'll help these third parties, because a lot of the signatures are allowed online, but you know, we might have to hit the bricks. So if you can, and you're listening, and you haven't signed these petitions yet for Green Party candidates, go to gpnj.org. Can they find it on the website?
You can look Hoffman for Senate. I believe she should have a page where you can do that. And I believe also Hallie Hawkins probably has a page for Hallie Hawkins, New Jersey. You also should have a page on the Facebook.
Yep. HallieHawkins.us is the website.
Yeah. And I think Madeline's is Hoffman for U.S. Senate.
Cool. Christian.
Yeah, I just got
Moderna,
one.
I don't even think we mentioned your podcast, Moderna.
Yeah, I kind of came blazing in there.
But it is a podcast for those listening. Christian Perez from Modernity and Absurdity Podcast. What you got, brother?
Yeah, so really quick, I just want to get a cheap plug in. So this Tuesday, I'm going to be offering a class. It's $19 through Brookdale Community College. It's called Conspiracy Theories and Exploration. It's going to be this Tuesday, June 16th. 2 to 3:30 p.m. It's $19. If you're interested, Conspiracy Theories and Exploration, you can call 732-224-2315, or you can email cps@brookdalecc.edu. And it's going to be a 90-minute class. I'm going to talk about conspiracy theories. The more, the merrier. I would love people to turn out. And like I said, it's only $19, so check it out.
Yeah. All right. Leah is in studio. I'll send her in real quick so she can wave goodbye to everybody. All right. Leah, let's see. Where is she? Can she come in? I can't get her in. What's going on? Oh, I see what I'm doing wrong. Here we go. I'm clicking the wrong button. There's Leah. Leah, did you quit your first show? How did we do?
We did great.
You're not going to quit.
Yeah. No. My family was watching. They loved it.
Great. You did a great job. Everybody did a great job. We will see you all soon. Thank you very much for joining us on New Jersey Revolution Radio Live. We come to you every week. We stream live on Twitter, on YouTube, on Facebook. We do podcasts. You can support us on Patreon, Venmo, all that stuff. Go to www.njrevolutionradio.com/donate. If you give a few bucks every month, we can get more done. I promise you. We really love what we do here, but we need you to support us. So until next week. When we see you again, this is Brian Powers, and I want to remind everybody that the police can quit their jobs. Keep that in mind when you're out there.
Have a good night, everybody.